Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining in and welcome to another episode of Hashtag Event Icons. Really appreciate if you're just tuning in. This is our first episode in 2022, and it is actually special for three reasons. First reason is because it's the first one. Second one is because it's my first one doing this podcast alone. And third one is because we have a very special guest today that's very dear to me. And we will be talking a lot about a topic that is very much so related to the pandemic. So you don't want to miss it out after the intro.
Hey, it's time for another episode of Hashtag Event Icons. Presented by Endless Events, the show where you get to ask the icons of the events industry anything. Just follow us on social media to ask questions. Our iconic guests will answer them live during the entire show. Before we get started, the more people we have watching, the better the conversation. So please help share Hashtag Event Icons on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Just tell your friends to watch live on any of our social media channels. Now, without any further delay, this is Hashtag Event Icons.
So our very special guest today is actually our very own, my team member and actually my manager, Keaton Watson. And I want to welcome him so we could get a little bit of a background on him and his past event experience. So Keaton, welcome. Thank you so much for joining in. So appreciate your time. I know that you have such a great experience in the event industry. So this will be such a valuable episode considering that we're constantly navigating the changes in the events industry. So what I wanted to do as kind of like a routine start of the episode is, can you give us a little bit of a background on, you know, your experience? How did you get into events and what kind of kept you in all these years? So.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. Let's see, I'm going on my ninth year in the events industry. I joined by working through audiovisual services in hotels with PSAV, which is now Encore, about 9 years ago. Prior to that, I was running and operating my own business in conjunction with a couple of personal partners that I've had with that business. But felt like moving into a more corporate structure and a bigger industry would have benefited me. So here we are. I've worked in hotels in Dallas, in Cleveland, in Florida, and now I've been with Endless Events for the past going on a year, actually. In February, it'll be a year, which is crazy to think.
Oh my gosh.
You know, crazy. Of course, we're going to talk about the pandemic some today, but I was one of many, many, many people in the industry who was a little bit displaced by the original COVID-19. So here we are. And we'll be talking about strategies to deal with that again 2 years later, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah. And you know what? I just really want to take a minute here because I feel like we're not getting enough props as event profs in this space that we're in. I know moms and dads are heroes, but we like literally made one industry that was about to tank forever. We still kept it alive. So I just want to say that give props to all the event planners for persevering. Cause I remember when it first started, I was kind of like on the front lines and I remember the freak out moments that a lot of industry or professionals experience. So I do, before we kind of start chatting about the actual topic, I wanted to bring up a very awesome comment that you received here. So yes. this was needed and that is so true. Thank you, Will, for tuning in and for leaving some love. So what we're gonna talk about today, I think this topic is so relevant considering that we just entered another phase of pandemic, and it's just very interesting to see different reactions for event planners. So we'll be talking a little bit about strategizing and navigating events considering the Omicron variant, and what are some potential options that event planners should take in consideration before they really kind of go with that gut instinct, like, I'm just canceling, I'm not going to do this, I'm just going to wait, you know? So do you mind kind of giving us a little bit of a rundown, since you talk a lot to clients, what are some common reactions to the current situation?
Yeah. It's been kind of a crazy few weeks for us. We are experiencing at least a little bit more in microcosm, the same experiences I think the majority of the events industry had a couple of years ago when COVID first hit the U.S. And there's been a wave of cancellations. I think the biggest thing now is that we're a lot smarter and much more prepared to deal with this. And obviously we all want, you would figure, you know, 2 years ago, you would think, well, when is this going to end? And I know that initially the speculation, oh, this is only going to be a few months, you know, things of that nature. But, you know, here we are 2 years later and we're still dealing with it. So we can take a lot of the learnings that we've had over the past 2 years to sort of alter our approach, I think is probably the thing. But honestly, what we're seeing now is a more inclination to more toward postponing an event rather than canceling it outright. And I think the one element that is a little bit different this time around than it was originally was there was a big push and the industry sort of evolved very, very rapidly in short order to be able to pivot to virtual. And 2 years later, that was hugely successful. But I think that the idea of potentially, you know, pivoting to a fully virtual solution for a lot of meetings is not the most attractive thing for a lot of customers and meeting planners, mainly because we see a lot more virtual burnout now. And so people are really itching to get back into those, you know, live event, in-person type events across the country. So that's totally understandable. So I think from our experience, what we're seeing more is this inclination towards postponement rather than pivoting. But I think that there are definitely options that relates to your overall event strategy that you need to consider when you're making those decisions.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you actually brought up a great point about the virtual fatigue, because I remember when we first started like virtual world, after mm-hmm. a couple of months, there was the phrase Zoom fatigue. So I very much so think that we beat that. Like somewhat beat it just because we have more options. There's just so many more options to engage the attendees, even the in a workplace. You know, I know that we kind of threw a couple inside parties through via different platforms, and it was fun and it was engaging. So I am just wondering, what is your suggestion? How could we potentially beat the virtual fatigue in general? Like how do we make these attendees a little bit more engaged? Because there's a feel like, you know, certain group ages are more prone to want to be completely live, and others are more prone to like, oh, I love the feel of this platform. I don't even need to go personally to the event. So how do we kind of engage the entire spectrum of attendees that we have considering the age and demographics?
You know, that's actually a really, really interesting point, because, you know, different organizations obviously have different demographics in their attendee base, and they really need to come up with a solution that fits that attendee base more intimately than what you would see just as a blanket solution. So I think that the number one resource that you need to have on hand are the statistics regarding the demographics of your attendee base. For instance, if you're an association that has an older attendee base, you know that you know, the virtual engagement is really tough for a lot of reasons. There are barriers around technology and user interface. There are barriers around, you know, the ability for continued engagement through a medium like we're sitting here now. I mean, I sit in this office every single day for hours on end, and for me, that's not really a problem. But I can imagine that somebody who might be 10 years older than I am would probably struggle with that a bit. So the number one thing I think meeting planners really need to consider are those demographics before they ever even really consider what solution they want to move towards in terms of their meeting. So it is a little bit easier to engage younger folks through these types of meetings here, or mediums here, like Zoom fatigue is a real thing. Yeah. But now we see it a little bit more because virtual platforms are essentially just like Zoom on steroids in some cases. So
yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. So just the features are, yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely some learnings that we can take. You know, early on, we learned really, really fast that one of the first things that you needed to change if you were going to pivot to a virtual model for your meeting would be that you probably can't do the traditional schedule, right? Your 3-day program that would generally last all day and then into the evening hours with social activities. Well, that's not a very feasible model for a virtual. So those 3-day programs traditionally that were live and in person would probably move to a 5 or even multi-week type format with half days. We think the cap is around 3 to 5 hours as far as attendee engagement through a virtual meeting mm-hmm. is really possible. So, that's one of the early learnings we took. There was a lot of innovation around gamification and, items like that through platforms. But I think now we take a lot of those learnings, like the scheduling piece of it and how to really schedule your event in a strategic way. But we also know that maybe the gamification that was developed 2 years ago or over the course of the last 2 years really may not necessarily be up to par with what's demanded now. So it's going to require some more innovation on meeting planners' parts, on producers' parts, and platform designers as well. I've recently had conversations with customers where they talked about the gamification specifically of their mm-hmm. platforms previously, and maybe the solutions were a little bit not in depth enough and strategic enough because people were figuring out how to game those systems in order to just get their points and
get out.
Inflate the statistics a little bit. And that's obviously not in the spirit of what we want to accomplish on those parts. So I definitely expect to see more innovation around gamification and engagement moving forward as the pandemic goes into its second full year. These are things that we can take and apply to models or meeting models even after the pandemic does end, because all of these learnings and the sort of the crazy evolution of the industry itself over the last 2 years, those lessons are not going to go away. So it's going to be important to be, even if you are not planning on doing more virtual, like, strictly virtual now, some of those virtual learnings will be applied to almost every live meeting in the future.
Awesome. Yeah, I think you gave such a great background on the current situation and the virtual fatigue portion. And I also wanted to bring up, we had a few comments in the chat, so I want to acknowledge them, and I want to say hello to Isaac. Thank you so much for leaving this comment. It was actually a great question. He says, Carmen, are you seeing a hold and wait pattern from clients who want to do in person, or are you seeing a willingness to go virtual one more time to reach their audiences? I think this is a great question. And to be honest with you, if I have to be honest with Isaac, I am getting a mixed feeling there. I don't know about you, Keaton. What's kind of like your experience in that field?
Yeah, I think it's dependent on the organization and what their goals are. I think from our perspective, what the trend that I can extract from what we're seeing is that larger organizations tend to fall on the side of let's wait and see mm-hmm. and try to host this event maybe later in the year in person rather than pivoting to virtual. But smaller organizations tend to say, well, we need to have this meeting now. So even if it needs to be virtual, we're going to do that. So we continue to get leads, returning customers over the last 2 years to say, hey, we're having to go virtual again. We need you to help us out. But even most recently, we've had programs that were contracted, scheduled, and ready to go decide to put a hold on their events and in the hopes that they can have that event in that same vision and as they originally conceived it later in the year. And so it's really dependent on the organization and its goals. And your overall event strategy, right? So, for instance, if I'm trying to have a sales kickoff meeting to kick off the year and set the tone and set the goals and things like that, well, that meeting, just because of the goals of that meeting, it's not really feasible to postpone that event and then do a kickoff in July or August because most Absolutely. Of the year is wasted, Isn't right? That? So that's the other really big factor.
Yeah. And really, when I'm thinking about the event profs that came to us, and I'm having a mixed feeling from them. Like, it's almost like they're looking for advice, which route they should go. Mm-hmm. That's why I thought that this would be such a wonderful thing to talk about, because I completely understand the space they're in. I just really feel like there's so much hesitation still with what can happen if they do it on site. So what I wanted to kind of chat about, if we're talking about hybrid option, the importance of COVID compliance. I know there's, I'm not very familiar with a lot of production companies offering COVID compliance packages. There is definitely some of our, one of our offerings. So I want to talk a little bit more in depth what is possible there to put event planners' minds at ease that it is possible to execute the live portion of the show, even though, you know, you have this variant that's kicking our butt again. So can you tell us a little bit more about the package and what do you think, what's the, why is it so important to potentially grab that package and go ahead and do the hybrid portion?
Yeah, that's a great question. I talked a little bit about how the industry's evolved, and maybe this is one of the, another large area where producers or event producers really have evolved as well, because the biggest advantage I think that we have, or the tool in our arsenal that we have now that we didn't have 2 years ago, may be the understanding of what kind of compliance measures need to be in place in order to host an in-person event. So, you know, we spend a lot of time developing a really robust catalog of COVID compliance services, everything from, you know, shipping in PPE for attendees to make sure that that everybody is compliant with whatever the COVID compliance strategy is for the event itself, to on-site testing, to, you know, badgeless, or I'm sorry, touchless registration and screening, even as it relates to registration and as trying to figure out seamless solutions to incorporate COVID compliance into the normal, registration process on site without it being super disruptive. So it's kind of an interesting thought because it expands, kind of breaks the bounds of what a traditional production company would normally say, hey, this isn't our area. But, you know, for us, it was a question of saying, you know, let's not let, if there's an opportunity to have an in-person meeting, then let's not let COVID compliance measures be the reason why we can't do that. So we often interact with different COVID expectations. So there's always the governmental expectations. So it, that may be in the form of local, state and local mask mandates or anything like that. And then the next layer would be the venue itself and what are the venue rules for the compliance piece of it. We of course have our own internal standards for our team members because we keep the health and safety of not only our team members, but you know, the people who are speaking at our events and the attendees in front of mine as well. So we have our own standards and the customer is going to have their own standards. And again, with depending on the profile of the customer, you know, larger organizations are very interested in limiting their liability from a COVID perspective. And nobody wants to be in the news for having had a super spreader event. So all those things kind of turn into this strange cocktail of we probably need to err on the side of caution. And so I don't know of too many production companies or event production companies in general who are offering a portfolio of COVID compliance services, but it's definitely an option. And it's one of the best ways that we have best tools in our arsenal to say, hey, you know, we understand that the number one reason that you might cancel your in-person meeting or postpone your in-person meeting is because of this piece of it. But if we could do your meeting in a really safe way, let's eliminate that objection, you know? So it really comes down to the customer and what their overall comfortability with it is. But, we feel that we have a pretty robust solution in order to be able to move forward. As long as, you know, the CDC is not saying, hey, we need to limit, number of, you know, meeting more than 25 people in a room is, you know, that's where we would get in the situation where COVID would really prevent you from having an in-person event.
Yeah. I actually wanted to ask you, now that you're talking about that COVID compliance, how can that, let's say, how can it package potentially help with the thought process of to the event planner? For example, if they're thinking about doing the hybrid meeting or virtual versus hybrid versus postponing, and what are some of the consequences that you're anticipating for the organizations to experience if they were to postpone the event?
Well, the most obvious consequence of postponing your event is that you're not going to be able to achieve the goals that you have for that event right away. So if your goals are oriented around a timeline, then not having that event is probably hugely detrimental to your ability to meet those goals, right? So if you can do the meeting safely in person and still achieve your goals, obviously that's the solution that is most preferred, but you do have the other options too. You can pivot to a completely virtual and limit your liability to zero. And, you know, we see that as being a rewash of what you did, you know, previously in the last year or two. And that's easy, and it may not give you the best engagement that you're looking for, but in the end, it may be the safest way to do your meeting. You have other options too that are anywhere along that spectrum as well. So, you know, hybrid's becoming, or if not already, is the way of the future. So there's a lot of advantages to a hybrid meeting, or at least having or transitioning to a hybrid model rather than a fully virtual model, which is, number one, you keep the reach of a virtual event, which is probably the strongest thing virtual has going for it, is that you can reach the people who, for whatever reason, aren't comfortable with going to an in-person event, or maybe they have some sort of situation with their personal lives that are limiting their ability to attend. Parents who are homeschooling kids, or things like things of those natures, they can still participate and attend the event from a hybrid perspective, because you're providing that avenue for online engagement. But also, you can limit your liability and still strategically have the right people in person attending your event that you want. So you may say, hey, we're going to take the top 25% of our sales team and put them into an on-site location somewhere else, but you know, the rest of the sales team can join virtually, and you may get some traction that way. It also sort of opens up the possibility of doing interesting venues and other things that are like non-traditional. Maybe if you're only putting 25 people in a room, you don't necessarily need to be in a hotel. Maybe you can do it in a studio movie grill or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it kind of opens up some interesting options to really reimagine your event and make it fun, new, and fresh.
Absolutely. I'm sorry to break the flow of the conversation. That's really, okay. Really am enjoying it, but I just enjoyed this, reading this comment, and I'm going to show it because it's so wonderful. I just love love. So I just love love. I don't know who this LinkedIn user is. I actually think I do know. I'm going to call her out. I think it's Sarah Crystal. So whoever it was, but I'm assuming Sarah, we appreciate your love and appreciate you tuning in and listening to us. Keaton, I wanted to, from our standpoint, as a production and event management company, I think now more than ever is so important to have that one partner who's going to be able to help you pivot, mm-hmm. pivot through this mess. And I think right. that's been a little bit underestimated. I think event planners really have a hard task here. They have the budget and they have to make the best of it. So sometimes that's not doable with this one particular partner. So they have to go ahead and look at, it's Chantel. I'm so sorry, Chantel. Why does it say LinkedIn user, Chantel? Here you go.
Why do you need to be anonymous?
Why do you have to be anonymous? I was just anticipating outside people, but thank you so much for the love. How did I underestimate you, Chantel? So sorry. But thanks so much for tuning in. So what I wanted to say is I think it's been very much so, this option is being very much so underestimated. I'm thinking it would be much more beneficial to essentially have, use less of a budget on a actual production, but spend more money to have the partner. But please mm-hmm. give me, so the listeners can have, especially event profs, can have a little bit of an example. Let's say we have an event prof come to us and they say, we decided to do a hybrid meeting and it's in April, April 20th, first week of April, crap hits the fan. We get a call, we can't do it hybrid, live doesn't exist anymore, we're not doing it. Can you help us pivot it to fully virtual? Can you kind of give us a little bit of a rundown on how things would flow if that was to happen?
Yeah, generally speaking, it'll be a little bit easier to transition from a hybrid model to a fully virtual model, because you're probably doing a lot of the pre-work in terms of platform implementation and getting that all set up. So maybe transitioning that from a hybrid to a fully virtual is fairly easy. You're just getting rid of the live portion, but transitioning directly from a live event to virtual is a little bit more challenging. I think from our end, We would love to have nobody transition from a virtual or from a in-person to a virtual medium with less than 6 weeks to go. We've done it before, but I think it creates a lot of stress on our team. And, you know, it's possible, but there just has to be some expectations that need to be stated up front about what's possible and what needs to be potentially sacrificed on the altar of being expedient. So that's a lot of it, really.
Yeah. And I also think that it's so important for event planners to really start these conversations early because, yeah. You know, now you know what's happening. This is not the first go around. Now, I think it's very much so important to, even if you are coming to that production partner, to ask them right away, give me the options. Give me, you know, how much would it cost to go hybrid, virtual, and really strategize around those options. And then obviously last but not least, postponing it, but hoping that will be the last resort. Keaton, one more question that came to my mind. As an event prof, how do we make the best out of this situation? How do we, considering that it's not the first go around and we're experienced, but we just don't know how long this is going to last. How do we keep making the best out of our meetings, considering that it's just so uncertain? Obviously, we were already able to keep the industry alive. So we're alive. We ain't going nowhere. But how do we keep the meetings engaging? How do we create a better experience for the attendees? How do we make them want to come back to us next year, even though I hope we're not going to be in this space? So,
yeah, that's a pretty complex question. I think in my mind, I feel like the number one thing that we need to do is look beyond the pandemic and try to see what meetings look like after everything goes back to normal, right? So let's assume that the future is full of meetings that have no restrictions on who can attend and whether there's, you know, health and safety risks and things like that. So what does that meeting look like? Right. It's probably hybrid. It definitely has an element of engagement and further reach than normal. So you're hopefully going to see from an event planner perspective, you would hope to see that your attendee numbers are going up by default year over year. Whereas maybe over the course of the last 2 years, you've either been static or maybe even down some on the attendee numbers. But just looking beyond what the immediate future has and determining what you think that your future model of your event is going to look like. And then you can work backwards from there and say, maybe strategically, how do I use this time to help facilitate that transition to what that future looks like? So if you are thinking that hybrid is going to be the way that you best support your attendees moving forward after the pandemic, then right now is the good time to get really well versed in what the ins and outs of having a virtual or a hybrid event look like. What are the things that you need to consider and start employing those plans now? And that gives you some space to really experiment, because the situation in the environment right now is really forgiving for experimentation that doesn't necessarily generate the return that you were looking for. We say it all the time, but there is no such thing as bad data, right? So if you do something that doesn't ultimately work the way that you thought it would in your event, well, number one, virtual is going to give you the analytics on a much more granular level than you're used to. So you'll be able to definitively see, yeah, we did this thing. It didn't really work the way we wanted to. So moving forward, we wouldn't really want to include that as an element. That's a great learning piece. It's it's not necessarily the best bang for buck, but you know, you're paying for that experience, number one. So you know that once you're past the pandemic and you're using that hybrid model, potentially, you know, you're not going to probably include that element because you learned over the pandemic that it doesn't work, right? So now's the time for experimentation. Now's the time for collaborating with an event partner. Now's the time to go back to the drawing board on your event strategy. Yep. and sit with a partner from the very beginning and say, we want to produce these events. Here's where we think the future is. How do we get there? And really lean on the experience of your long-term event partner to help facilitate that. And, you know, we're an event management company that is very well-versed in the strategic crafting of an overall event strategy. So,
And you know what? Sorry to cut you off there. That's actually a great point as far as the strategy. So I wanted to ask you, I just before this episode started, I had a call and this particular potential client was inquiring about strategy sessions. Could you just give us a rundown what a quality strategy session could look like in this space? Event pros know that they're getting the best value, even if they decide to reach out to somebody for that strategy session.
Yeah. I think a great strategy session is going to really focus on a few things. Primarily speaking, having a very deep understanding of what the goals of these events are, which is probably not talked about enough in the process, right? So what has happened traditionally is all the ideation around an event has happened in the past. And so now we're in a situation where we're just rinse and repeat, right? So when you come to an event partner later down the line, you already have a set vision in mind. You know how it's worked in the past and you're looking to replicate. So you're not necessarily worried about or wondering about, you know, is this event still achieving the goals that I have or my organization has or whatever. So I think if you're looking to re-strategize your events, the first thing you have to stop at is to say, hey, what are my goals? How are we getting there? What do we need to see from these events? And a great partner to help you with that strategy will ask you those questions and really make you think about that and won't let you get away with saying, well, you know, we're not too worried about the goals, because honestly, the goals is where, you know, your strategy is sort of born. So once you've established some really set goals around what your event is meant to accomplish, then you can move forward with what's the best way to facilitate that. Like, what kind of analytics do we need to see to make sure that we're measuring the return on investment and achieving your goals? And from there, I think you sort of organically are able to go down the path of figuring out which event model works best for you, what's your best platform partner to help you facilitate those things. And it just sort of informs all areas of the conversation after that.
Absolutely. Awesome. And I guess for the wrap up, just for to really give the event pros peace of mind, any suggestion or advice based on the conversation that you've been currently having that you can potentially give to these event planners as to how they should navigate this current mess? We all know it will pass, but how do we keep persevering through in the midst of it? And how do we make the best possible decision for the event in this particular space that we're in?
Yeah. Well, the number one thing that we have to say is that we definitely recognize that event planners are generally not the people who make the final decision on whether or not an event is safe to have. They generally aren't the ones making the final decision about what the budget is over the course of the year for each of these events, those types of things. So, like, for us, it's about supporting event planners and being able to inform them and educate them enough in the conversation to be able to take that back to decision makers and say, hey, these are the things that are here are our options, and make a recommendation to them as to the best way to move forward. So that's the number one thing. If I was going to give any advice to event planners right now, it's to be open to creativity and to new ideas. Maybe it's in the short term a little bit more work than you're used to host an event that you maybe have been doing for years, but again, now is the time to experiment, and now is the time to really try to be innovative and figure out the best way. And you may stumble upon a strategy that, you know, this works a little bit better than what it has in the past, right? So you can then take those strategies and incorporate them moving forward. And then the last piece I think that really has to be talked about is platforms themselves and how they're moving towards a community model. Mm-hmm. And the reason I talk about this is because, traditionally speaking, the community model is very challenging for event planners to fit into a budget, because we're very used to, as an industry, looking at a single event and saying, here's my budget for this event. And then maybe if I have four or five events over the course of the year, each of those events have their own separate budget. But if you're able to break out of that model a little bit and maybe borrow from each budget bucket, if you will, to facilitate a community investment into a platform, I think you're really setting yourself up for success in the long term, because you are eliminating some of the challenges that you encounter right away when you start moving to a hybrid or virtual model. So What are the big challenges, right? There's user interface and comfortability with the user interface. So I think everybody's probably had this experience where they decide to attend a virtual event and there's a platform and you get your email and you register for the platform, you do all that stuff, but then you spend the first hour trying to figure out how to use the platform yourself. Maybe setting up your schedule and figuring out what buttons to click. But if you have the same platform for multiple meetings and you have attendees who are attending all of those meetings, then by the end of the first meeting, then that sort of problem goes away. And so they're able to freely engage with the subsequent meetings or events through the community. And that learning curve around the technology is gone because they've already done all of that first. Secondly, the community model really allows you to engage your attendees outside the bounds of the event date, right? So maybe I have a 2-day meeting, traditionally speaking, but if I'm able to talk to attendees and engage them in a way outside of those 2 days of the actual event, I've got a really powerful tool for a number of things, right? We can do it for marketing. We can talk about, eliminating paper waste and things like that from sending out mailers to your attendees. Potentially you're talking about being able to make a change in schedule and facilitate it through the platform where you don't have to worry about the lag time and a person understanding that maybe their schedule has changed. Lots of little things that you can do to engage your attendees beyond just those 2 days of the event, so that maybe that event becomes a culmination of experiences that have been set up, 6 months. Maybe you're doing strategic marketing delivery through the platform to your attendees to inform them, and then you're generating the excitement and basically marketing your event to your captive audience inside that platform community. So lots of really cool and interesting space to explore with the community model, but it's just tough to get there originally because many event planners can't break out of the traditional budgetary mindset around events to be able to facilitate a year-long solution.
Yep, absolutely. Last question that I wanted to address, the timelines, because those are pretty tricky with things rotating and, event planners not knowing which model to use. What's kind of like the ideal timeline to have that kind of leaves the room for pivoting if necessary? If you can give us a rundown on timelines.
Yeah, I think if you're going from fully in-person to fully virtual, you need at least 6 weeks. That's the kind of the bare minimum, I would think. So the sooner the better, to be honest with you. If you're going from a hybrid to a fully virtual meeting, then I think that it's a lot easier. And we still probably would want 6 weeks, but it's a little bit more flexible than that, because you're already doing some of the pre-work to set up a platform in that way too. It's also important to think, if you are on that community model that we were just talking about, you may not necessarily be having hybrid events. You may be having fully in-person events, but your platform is acting as more of an event app in that scenario, like traditionally speaking. So you're still delivering maybe on-demand content and recordings through your platform. You're doing those things. And if you have all that set up already, the pivot from fully in-person to fully virtual is actually a lot easier than it would be traditionally, because you already have that working relationship with the platform and can host that meeting virtually kind of on a dime. All your branding and graphics are probably already in the platform, all those things, and all those assets are already exist within the platform, and you can reuse them to facilitate a virtual event pretty easily.
That is awesome. Awesome conversation. I truly hope, I mean, this episode, I always hope that these episodes are helpful, but this one specifically, because it does address a current state. We typically have, we make conversation out of topics in the events industry that are most common, but this one is, as we're chatting, this is what's happening. So I hope event planners and event profs really find this valuable. And I just want to leave it at, please do reach out if you have any questions, via LinkedIn, via Facebook, hop on a website, make an inquiry via chat or something. We would really love to help out. Keaton, thank you so much for joining me. I know your schedule. I know your schedule, and I know what I did to it with asking you to be on this podcast.
That's okay.
I definitely murdered the schedule, but you made the time. So I want to say extra thank you. I appreciate you from a personal and professional standpoint. You're a wonderful human, wonderful coworker, and amazing event prof. And I hope everybody finds this episode helpful and everything that you had to say. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Appreciate your comments in chat. Please tune again next week, and we'll see you again.
Thanks. See you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for another amazing episode of Hashtag Event Icons. To catch all of the bonus content, resources mentioned, and an invite to our Facebook and LinkedIn groups, head to www.event-icons.com. Also, let us know what you thought about this week's episode, share your biggest takeaway, and just tag your social media posts with Hashtag Event Icons. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again soon, right here on Hashtag Event Icons.